Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen. We are here to pump up your parenting skills, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Welcome to Parent Pump Radio. Our show is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and syndicated on missionsradio.org and livelyplay.com. Parent Pump Radio is brought to you by Integrative Minds. Become the leader you were meant to be. Leave a multi-generational legacy in wealth, health, happiness for your family and loved ones. Go to integrativeminds.com to schedule your complimentary consultation and be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed so you'll be automatically notified of new shows. Are you having a hard time setting limits with your children? Do you wish there was some practical tool that could help you resolve universal family challenges? And are you a parent feeling alone and frustrated? Well, you are not alone. I recently found a wonderful organization called Hand in Hand Parenting, and they're really in line with my parenting coaching practice and program, and I always believe there isn't any competition and that together we become stronger. So I had to meet the ladies behind Hand in Hand Parenting. So first I wanted to tell you a little bit about Hand in Hand Parenting. It works with parents providing resources, trainings, and lots of support. And for more than 20 years now, their parenting by connection approach has given parents really practical tools to resolve universal family challenges. And their fresh and effective framework is really consistent with the latest research and results in the long-term family success. Our guest today is a mom to two sons. They're both now 8 and 10. Her eldest was born needing multiple heart surgeries, and her youngest encountered medical challenges as well. She found herself struggling with regular old day-to-day parenting, so she decided to learn why parenting could feel so tough even when she had all the love in her heart and the best of intention. And she found her answers in hand parenting. Because really, love is great, but you still need the skills that work too. So I'd like to introduce you to Abigail Wald. Hi, Abigail.
Hi, Jacqueline. It's lovely to meet you. I just wanted to say, Patty Whipler is actually the woman behind Hand in Hand Parenting. She founded it. And she's also co-written a book with Tasha Shore called Listen. For anybody who's interested in learning more, of course, going to handinhandparenting.org. And I am a certified consultant for Hand in Hand Parenting because I myself went to Hand in Hand Parenting about 9 years ago to look for help. And now I work with Patty, helping with a number of other Hand in Hand Parenting consultants around the world, really.
Wow. Okay. I want to talk more about hand-to-hand parenting, but before we do, I want to talk to you about your life. Like, how did you get here?
That's a good question. I asked myself that. Okay, so I was in some ways like a candidate to be a great mom. I had waited till I was in my late 30s. My husband and I were happy together. We both really wanted kids. And I was, in general, like a conscious, loving person. I thought worked through all of my stuff in my 20s and 30s. And I was like, I'm going to be great at this.
And then reality hits. You actually have the kid.
So, you know, first of all, I should say parenthood sort of hit me over the head with a frying pan in that my oldest son was born needing, he had a congenital heart defect. And so he was needing to have multiple open heart surgeries at birth. My father also died in the first 6 months after he was born. And there was just a lot going on for us. And I didn't realize, I kind of thought, well, golly, I love my kids and I'm a conscious person. Like, how hard could this be? And what I found was that the day-to-day struggles of parenting beyond my first son's medical issues and then my second son's medical issues were really intense. And funny, the medical stuff ties in that because of my first son and my second son having different kinds of medical issues, I wound up really becoming fascinated by research and by a journey towards health and wellness. And feeling like there's a lot of information out there and it's my job to heal my family. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be the surgeon, certainly, or the doctor or the nutritionist, but it's my job to put it all together and synthesize it and create a healing protocol plan. So when we were able to sort of overcome with the help of Children's Hospital Los Angeles and so many other people, my first son healed beautifully. And then my second son also healed beautifully with an entirely different protocol of really nutrition. I went in the kitchen one day because I was tired of saying no to all the snacks that he couldn't eat because he was eating no gluten, no dairy, no corn, no soy, no sugar for a 1.5-year-old. It was a pretty big deal. And I went in the kitchen and I decided to create this snack that I could say yes to, which is why it's called the Yes Bar. And today we're a national company. But what's fascinating about it is that when I got down to day-to-day parenting, I found that, you know, just being a regular parent to two healthy children was enough to drive me insane. And
yeah.
Part of it had been all the stuff I had held back in my heart for those first few years, just making it through. But part of it was just, boy, parents have a lot on their plate, you know, and not sleeping very often comes with the territory. It certainly did for me. And just having to hold someone else's feelings all the time and be the leader of your family, it requires a tremendous amount of groundedness. And I know that's a lot of what you teach is being a leader, and I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, when we don't have the support we need, I think, you know, we used to live in villages and we used to have a lot more information shared with us. And I have this feeling now that parents are like hiding in their house, feeling like, I should know how to do this. This should all be coming easier. Or like I had, you know, that sort of secret idea of like what it was going to look like. And then like you're faced with the reality and they don't match, because no parent ever woke up, you know, had a baby rocking in their arms thinking like, can't wait till I can put you in a timeout. I can't wait till I yell at you. Right. Yeah. Like nobody ever wanted to do that. Right.
Yeah. And I think like you were saying is when you have the steps and you have the tools, it's like building a house or flying to the moon. Yes, it's difficult, but when you have the training and you know how to use your tool, it makes it so much more relaxing.
Oh, so much more. And it was interesting because as I said, I got really into research, right? And I was so interested in learning. And so when I realized, wow, I'm not doing as great a job at this as I wanted to, as I thought I would, I started reaching out for help and I started really reading every article I could and reading every book I could and going everywhere and listening to everything and doing classes. And
you and I sound the same.
Yeah. and I was like, yeah, that's good, but... And, you know, what I found was often I would feel frustrated. Like I'd get to the point where I thought, well, like something was wrong with me. Like I would do it, but it didn't work, you know? And then I got to the point where I thought, well, I'm doing it, but something's wrong with my kids. You know, like I have particularly difficult kids, especially one of my kids was harder. And at that time, and I thought, well, it's either me or it's them. It sounds like a bad breakup joke, you know? Yes. But I can't break up with you. And I loved my kids. Gosh, I loved them so much. And that was where the pain came from, was like, I'm trying to make this work. And yet here's this struggle. And so then ultimately when I found Hand in Hand, this is a really personal thing, but I'll share with you. I had gotten to the point where I was considering medication for one of my kids. I was pretty sure that something was wrong and that he was psychotic or had no empathy, or that I, and really I say this, like, please know this really isn't about him. It's just about where I was in that moment. I was so depressed. I couldn't figure out a way to connect with him. I thought I was like doing everything right. And I just kept falling and failing. And I felt I was failing him, and he was explosive. And I just didn't know how I could ever get out of this. And on that day, I was filling out a psychiatric intake form for a $900 appointment for him, for us, as a family. And I thought, God, I don't believe in this, but I'm doing it. Because I was so desperate. And someone had mentioned hand-in-hand parenting along the way. And I thought, yeah, well, that and a lullaby will get my kids asleep.
Sudafed, the other one.
Yeah, I've tried everything.
So it sounds like when you found hand-in-hand, it was almost like finding Jesus for certain people. It was like the heavens opened up. I want to get into what the meat of the problem is. And I know one of the biggest problems that I hear of parents is setting limits. How does Hand in Hand help with that?
Absolutely. The way that we approach that, setting limits is, I think, one of the most beautiful tools. And I think one of the things when people first come to Hand in Hand, a lot of what we talk about, and I do need to mention this before we actually talk about how we set limits, because otherwise it won't make sense. A lot of what we talk about is connection. Because really, when we can understand that our children are good and there's no such thing as misbehavior, there's behavior that's not going to result in a great thing, right? You know what I mean, right? But all behavior is actually essentially communication. And when we develop the ability to actually listen to that communication of a child who's off track, it doesn't mean we're going to accept the off-track behavior. And that's where limit setting comes in, is sometimes we do have to set a limit around behavior that's not going to work, right? But if you're coming at that from a punitive perspective, if you're trying to forcefully change a child's behavior. That's the thing as parents, the pitfall is we get focused on our kids' behavior and we either try to bribe them out of it or distract them away from it or punish them. All of that is a forceful grab at trying to get your child to do a different behavior. And I get that because as parents, that's what drives us nuts, right? It's like, we just need to get out of the house. We need you to buckle up, or we need you to not hit your sister. You know, there's things we need.
I think the biggest one is they need to do homework.
Yeah.
They need to do their chores.
There are things that need to happen in the day. And so one of the things as a hand-in-hand consultant that we talk about in hand-in-hand is, first of all, understanding your child, understanding their perspective, and understanding that how the brain works. And if I can give you a little bit of the science behind it, I think it'll help.
Sure, absolutely. Okay. I love the science.
Great. So I'll give you a little bit of the science, and then I promise we will get to limit setting. It's just going to make a lot more sense after all this. So basically, the way our brains as mammals work, got the brain stem, which is responsible for our automatic functioning of our body, you know, our heart and our cells separating and dividing and our breathing and all of those things that we don't have to think about. Like, we don't put kidney cells divide at 3 p.m. on our calendar, you know, it just happens.
Yeah.
And then there's your limbic brain. And that brain is responsible for, it's almost like a good, bad gateway. Like, this feels good, this doesn't feel good. This feels safe, it doesn't feel safe. Really, that's what good means. It's responsible for making sure that we're safe. Because that's a huge necessary precursor to anything else. And so there's this part of our brain that's really sensitive to that. And there's a part of that limbic area that's called the amygdala. And we have these two amygdala in our brain. And they're kind of, and by the way, that let me just be very clear that the neuroscience on this is always still developing. We understand a very small portion of this, but from what we can understand now, the amygdala is largely responsible, not entirely. It's getting more and more interesting the more we learn about the brain, but largely responsible for, it's almost like a hair trigger, right? So imagine this trigger that we have for that area of the brain to like very quickly perceive things and understand, do I feel safe? Do I not feel safe? And so that amygdala, I like to think of it like this, like if I can take everybody back to like one of those 1980s Mission Impossibles. And so let's say you're like crawling through the museum trying to grab a painting and you're trying to steal this painting and you're crawling and it's like, dun, 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 dun. You suddenly, there's those laser beams of light, you know, that are there to trap you. And if you put your elbow too high, you're going to catch one of those laser beams and the entire museum's going to shut down. It's just going to go like, alarms go off, gates come down, everything is stopped. That's kind of how I perceive what happens in our brain when the amygdala gets triggered. And so what happens is your brain stops there in that place and it doesn't get to go on to the very yummy top portion of our brain called the prefrontal cortex. That prefrontal cortex is what allows us to have intelligent communication, thoughtful, kind thinking, do math, science, arts, creativity, problem solving, verbal communication, clear ability to listen to somebody else and also think about ourselves. Like, all of those things, they're in your prefrontal cortex. That's where you're solving the problems. And so the problem is, if a person gets triggered for any reason into unsafety, okay, and this happens hundreds of times a day. So if a person gets triggered, then they can't think. And so this happens both for our children and for us. And when you really start to understand that, then you can take a simple situation, like let's see a child trying to do homework. So a child comes home and maybe they're filled with all sorts of experiences that have happened for them at school. And they come home and the parent is already on their own train. They've already got their own agenda of like, homework is always a battle. And I don't want to do anything because I know he's going to get home. And if I let him do other stuff, he's not going to get to his homework. And I'm starting to stress out already. And I'm thinking, okay, great. I've got an answer. The answer is we do homework before we do anything else. Because that's my answer of what's going to make it work. But that answer might not work for the child because the child has already been through an entire day of having to do hundreds and hundreds of things where they had to do it and what they felt didn't matter. And so now they get home. And if they get home and it's the same world where, again, what I feel doesn't matter. And what I'm really needing is connection and some downtime and to let my brain relax for a moment. And it doesn't matter if the child's in kindergarten or the child's in seventh grade. If they're in kindergarten, it might be everyone took the carrots and I didn't get any. The blue paint spilled all over my painting. You know, if they're in seventh grade, it might be, you know, my friend didn't invite me to a party or the kids made fun of my new haircut, right? It's just different stuff. And so all that piles on and they need a place to release. They need a safe place to land. And so the first thing when we see our kids after a school day might be to connect. You know, demand yet another thing where they feel unsafe. And who knows what they're feeling about homework. Homework might be rearing up all sorts of feelings for them about, I'm not doing well in school, or my teacher gave me like a bad grade on my test, or this is when I got up to do this problem in school today at the math board, I got laughed at. Like, we don't know all the things that have happened for them all day. It's just a good example of, we might come in with that demand and then that might take their brain into a place of unsafety. And then we might start either bribing, like, come on, do your homework, and then you'll get to do a video game, or do your homework, and then I'll give you whatever. Or we might try forcing them to do it and say, look, if you don't do your homework, we're not going to let you have that sleepover on Saturday. So that's like a forceful punishment. And really what might need to happen is that if the child, the parent can just learn to listen and say, like, you're not ready to do it, huh? Yeah. Okay. Tell me why. Or would you rather play for a moment? How about I give you a little special time? That's another one of the things that we teach in Hand in Hand, is special time, where you give your child undivided attention for a set amount of time that you can handle. And so, you know, I won't go into that tool right now because it takes a little time to explain, given that I know we want to talk about limit setting, but you can certainly go to handinhandparenting.org, look that up, understand more about special time, which is different from just quality time. And so if you can connect with your child, then together you can craft a way to come around. And so now we get to setting limits, right? So my limit might be to understand, well, what is my limit? Is my limit you actually need to do homework right now? Or is my limit homework needs to get done before we go to bed? So first step in limit setting is always understand the limit you're about to set. Really, what is your limit? Because very often we've got a problem, which is homework needs to be done, but we'll get very attached to one solution for that problem. There's actually many ways to skin a cat. So if we can connect with their child about the limit, like the limit is homework needs to get done, how should we do it? That becomes a co-creating solution on some level, where instead of just coming at a child with a demand without taking that time to connect and listen. So that's just one first step. It's not really part of the limit setting tool, but I think it's a very important piece of it. When we set a limit, to understand, where is our child? Where are we? How's the connection level right now? And what is my limit really? How can I get really clean about what is my limit? If I come without a demand, but just looking together at the limit. And I think that's a very important piece of it, is we want to be on our child's side looking at the limit. I'm with you. Almost imagine that you've got your arm around your child going, huh, so we're here, it's 4 o'clock and we're going to go to bed at 7 and homework needs to get done at some point in there, right? And that limit is just, it's a wall. It doesn't need to like yell at somebody. It just is. It's just a fact. It just needs to get done. It's an accepted fact. And if your child doesn't want to do the homework, that takes us into now different tools of hand-in-hand parenting that we could use. So again, like I mentioned, one of the things, maybe they need to connect. Maybe they need to play. Maybe you're going to deal with it playfully. Play is always a great first step. And so you might come to the child and say, really? They don't want to do homework? What should we do with our homework? Should we bury it? Right? Maybe you're going to play with like some idea around that.
So humor, bring in humor.
Yeah, bring in humor. What's something that makes your child laugh? Listen for the laughter, you know, maybe you tack the homework up on a wall and you take a dodgeball and you like hit it as hard as you can. Who knows what that child needs to get out about that? So we could try some play there. And sometimes, very, very often, when we set a limit as a parent, the child actually may need to cry, may need to fight back, may need to say, no, I'm not doing it. I hate homework and I'm never doing it. And very often that's when a parent steps in and they'll try to use logic. Now remember, a child in that moment feels unsafe. They don't really have access to their prefrontal cortex.
And especially when it doesn't even get fully developed until they're 25. So they're only using anywhere between 25 to 50%.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And that is true. The brain is not fully developed until that point. And yet what we find is that when you give a child connection and love, even a two-year-old is capable of making the most extraordinarily thoughtful choices. Children are so wise. And when we can connect with them, we stand the greatest chance of lighting up that part of their brain that is wise. And when we talk at them, demanding things or getting angry or getting frustrated or bring our own fears to the table of, I'm afraid you're never going to be able to do a job. I'm afraid you're never going to, you're not a responsible person. You're not this. It triggers all our own stuff. That's, you know, re-stimulation, right? We have a tool for that as well called listening partnerships. But that re-stimulation often causes us to then start to really tight on our kids and start demanding things, or, as I said, get into that forceful kind of parenting. And the thing about that I just want to make sure to hit on this is that hand-in-hand parenting is not permissive. We're not saying, oh, you don't want to do your homework? Okay, don't do it, right? That's not what we're saying. But a limit doesn't need to be brought with harshness. It can be brought with tremendous warmth. And so again, I've got my hand around my child if they let, and I'm looking at it going, oof, we need to do this homework. Yeah. How should we do it? What do you want to do? And the child may say, I want to do it in an hour. Okay. I'm going to give a child a chance to do that. Okay. What would you like to do in the hour first? I'm going to try to pour connection. I'm not going to let that child just go off for that hour, because I know if I don't pour connection in an hour, they're not going to be clear thinking again. Why? Because they need my connection to clearly think. So if that hour is, I just want to go do, you know, whatever, maybe the child's a teenager, I want to do some social media. Okay, great. Will you help me? I might be able to be okay with that. It would help me if I had a schedule maybe around that so I could understand. And let's have some special time. You know, first or after. Let's make sure we put 15 minutes of special time in there. I know my child's going to need connection to be able to think clearly. Also understand, when you set a limit, if you've got a child who is going to have a hard time meeting that limit, because some limits children can meet easily, and some limits children will really have a hard time with. That means they've got a lot of feelings around it. I, as the parent, as the leader, as the clear thinking leader, need to know that I'm going to need time to listen to this child. That doesn't mean in an hour I say, oh, time's up, and I expect that child to sit down. I have to build in that there's going to be time for that child to scream, cry, wail, and I'm going to need to listen. Because this is the thing, and this gets into our tool of stay listening, which really you can't do limit setting without understanding the tool of stay listening, which is the ability to ride a child's grieving process or anger, feelings, whatever those feelings are. So often when we set a limit, it will kick a child into that rage or that grief, that ability that actually they can't meet that limit yet. And they may have lots of feelings about it. And so those feelings might pour forward. And if we can trust that a child has their grieving, this is the thing. Children start to have these big feelings, and parents think, I've got to squash that feeling, or I've got to help them understand that's not a true feeling, or that feeling's based on an erroneous idea, or they can't have this feeling because if they have this feeling, they're not going to be someone who can do homework. They're actually working through the process of becoming the person who can do homework. And when we allow a child and trust in that grieving process, trust those feelings and ride that wave, then, you know, they really can get through to the other side.
Yeah, it's like a lot of support is what I'm hearing. A lot of love, which is very different than, say, like in the service or something, where it's just demanding. And children, I believe at this age, they really need that feeling of warmth, comfort, and love. And then when they get older, maybe in college, a little bit more, you know, a different way. But still, I do agree with you about that. It's so powerful. And why do you think setting limits is so important?
I think setting limits are important because it allows a child to grow resilience and grit. Those things that we hear about all the time, like, oh, it's such an important tool. Well, how do you grow it, right? Well, this is how you grow it, is actually by letting a child grieve and then do it. If I can, I'd love to share a real story from you. This is actually from the beginning of when Patty first created Hand in Hand. This is one of her first stories. And I think it's such a beautiful point. So can I share this real story?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So I'd love to tell a story here of our founder, Patty Whitfler, and actually how she founded Hand in Hand, because I think it really illustrates the limit setting and the listening so beautifully. So part of how it all started was Patty was walking one day, and a woman that she really didn't know that well, who just had the ability to listen, asked her, you know, how's parenting going for you? Patty suddenly wound up crying, and she wound up just pouring forth. And really, this woman really knew how to listen to her. And it was a really new experience for Patty. She just poured forth and let go of all of her true feelings about it. And the woman just cared and listened. It didn't offer any advice. And after this experience, Patty found herself feeling so much more resilient, coming to her own parenting with just this renewed energy and verve and capability and resilience. And soon after this, Patty found herself in a situation where she had to give her 2-year-old eye drops. And there you go. There's a classic limit set for you, right? I have to give you eye drops. And the child doesn't necessarily want eye drops.
Yeah.
So this 2-year-old, she had to give him eye drops. And she, I wonder if I could use that weird listening thing here. Like, I wonder what would happen. So she looked at him and she said, I have to put these drops in your eyes. And she showed him the eyedropper bottle and showed him, you know, what it was going to be like. And he saw and cried. And she decided, instead of pushing forward, she was going to listen to him. And this is really how the limit setting technique works. I was going to try to say this earlier. Listen, limit. That's really how it works. So you're going to see that through this story. So she listens to him. And as he crests and cries about this for quite some time, she just listens. You're a little worried. You don't want me to do it. Just listening. He crests and he's sobbing. He sort of starts to come down. And the moment he starts to come down, she says again, yeah, I'm going to have to put these drops in your eyes. So she holds the limit again, very gently. He cries, throws himself back, hurls himself back. And then this keeps going, right? Listen, limit, listen. And after about 45 minutes, it takes time. Now, for all the parents listening, it doesn't have to take this much time every time. I promise you, if you do this, children become very quick. This gets very compressed. And there will be times that it will take a lot of time. So the first few times, it really does take some time. And it's the first few times about any new subject, really. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it depends on how big their feelings are. Often they'll only cry for 1 or 2 minutes if you really let them go. And they'll find themselves very quickly. But if they've got a lot stored up around it, it might be longer. So anytime you shortcut that, you shortcut the growth. Okay? So there will be times you can't listen, and it's okay to say, I'm sorry, I can't listen right now. Like, we're getting on the plane. I know you don't want to. We got to get on the plane. There are times you can't listen. But when you can and you do this, the growth curve is exponential.
Yeah, it's the process. They have to go through that process. Yes. I teach a communication class. I used to do it for the corporate world. People think communication is talking. No, the most important thing about communication is active listening,
yes,
where you're really listening in between the lines and hearing the emotion that's coming out. All of us, I think a lot of times we're listening, but really we're listening to respond.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And when you can listen and really hear, I think for me, when I listen to my kids really intuitively, it changes actually my limits.
Yes, sometimes it does.
Sometimes it does. If you notice that, like, you end up realizing that it was just your agenda and you didn't consider why maybe it's not so important or
absolutely.
And you start meeting in that middle. And the other thing that I think it creates is the bond between you and your children. Because when they feel that you are really listening and acknowledging and validating how they feel, they actually will want to do what you didn't want them to do or do what you want them to do.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's so interesting. Parents are so afraid of changing after they've set a limit because they think it's going to make them look weak. And this is the thing, it's the exact opposite. If you have somebody who is a dictator, just sticks to their agenda, you write them off and you say, you know what? You're always telling me to do stuff and it doesn't matter what I say. So I don't care at a certain point, I write you off. But if you have a parent who really listens to you and sometimes really holds the limit because the limit needs to be held, and sometimes says, you know what, that limit is like, I could change that. You know what I mean? I hear you and you're right. I really think about that differently now. Then you feel valued, you feel important, you feel you have trust in this leader, you're more likely to follow them. And it doesn't make you not a leader to change your mind, it makes you a benevolent, smart leader. And so anyway, I want to finish this Patty story.
Okay, go ahead.
Fabulous. So she puts these drops and, you know, I'm sorry, she doesn't put the drops, she waits and she keeps reminding him of the limit. You know, yes, I'm gonna have to put these drops. He cries and cries and cries, and this goes on for quite some time. And at a certain point, finally, she says, can I show you the eyedropper? And he says, yes. And she shows it to him. And he says, he wants to put the drops in his own eyes. Now he's 2, right? How many parents would immediately be like, no, I have to do it, right? But Patty's listening to him. She goes, okay, well, how about this? You can try. And if it doesn't work, then I'll have to help you. And he's like, yeah. And he decides to do it, puts the drops in his eye, runs off totally happily, no problem. And for the next 7 days or 3 days or however many days they had to do it, he just comes up to her, just pops in his eyes, and he's done. And there you see, you've created resilience. You've created trust, a bond. This child has worked through. If they had held him down and just done it, because no child will ever agree to this, let me just get it over with, which is how we parent, then that child never had the chance to become the child who could do that. And it's just so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And you build that sense of confidence, and also they're thinking of different ways to do
yes.
something. Mom doesn't have to do it. Hey, I can yes. do it. And that is almost like an entrepreneurial mindset that you're setting them for, right?
Couldn't agree more.
Thinking outside the box of how else can this happen and still get the same result. So absolutely. That's why I was saying, like, your belief and your techniques and your program just is so in line. And I'm almost like thinking, maybe I should get trained in your program.
Come do it. It's awesome. Come.
Just more tools for my clients. We're coming to a close, but I want to ask you about your future projects. What are ways that Hand in Hand can help with struggling parents?
Oh, yes. Okay. So many ways. So as I said, we have all these different tools. There's really only five of them. It doesn't take too long to learn. You can go to the website, handinhandparenting.org. We're also going to be giving you a way to sign up to get the Setting Limits booklet. So you certainly will have that. And that's a little booklet which will go over setting limits for you in more detail than I was able to. And you certainly can also sign up. Handinhandparenting.org has classes. You can reach me directly. I'm at realtimeparenting.com, and I am a certified Hand in Hand parenting consultant. So you can certainly reach out to me directly there. And Hand in Hand has many consultants. So you can also look for different consultants who might speak to you more. Things I'm super passionate about is I love supporting parents who feel like they've got kids who are really difficult. I feel like they've got a kid, I like to call it, you know, you're an apple tree and you feel like you have like your apples and then there's an orange and you're like, what do I do with the orange? I love helping parents deal with their orange. I love helping parents deal through medical challenges because I've certainly been through that with my kids, and it's a real passion of mine to help support the children and the parents through that. I love working with boys and girls, and you know, I don't work with the children directly. Only with the parents. And all of us at Hand in Hand, our passion is supporting parents. There are tons of articles on the website, lots of articles you could look up.
Yeah. And I know you have a free Facebook live class that goes on.
Yes, I try to do that Friday mornings. It's not every Friday morning, but it's very often. You can certainly look on my Facebook page and look up past ones as well. Yeah, and that's at Real Time Parenting.
And we're going to have all the links in the show notes. Well, thank you, listener. And thank you, Abigail, so much. It was so informative.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jacqueline. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's amazing.
And thank you, listener. Keep on listening to us and keep on learning and keep on growing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.